Yeah, I want to thank the organizers for having me here today. So what I'm going to present today is mostly experimental data on the fragility of metallic systems that were collected about the last 15 years. So 15 years ago, I was postdoc with Bill Johnson at Caltech. Just 1.5 years into my 6 years postdoc time with Bill Johnson, and that time Austin Angel published this well-known plot in Science. And well, the question for us was, we just had these nice bulk metallic glasses that have been first developed by Professor Inoue at Sendai in the late 80s and then in Bill Johnson's group. And we now had the opportunity to really look deep into the supercooled liquid region. Earlier on in the more conventional glasses that you had to melt spin, you rarely were able to even touch the supercooled liquid. So we had a whole new playground to work with. We had bulk samples and we had this large time temperature window to measure, for example, kinetic properties. Well, the question was, where are metallic systems in this Angel plot? And so we were doing experiments in Bill Johnson's group, and we used different methods that had not been used for metallic systems before because we didn't have bulk samples before. For example, we used three-point beam bending, make a creep test with three-point beam bending around the glass transition temperature. We did parallel plate rheometry, and we also worked in the liquid state here at high temperatures above the liquidus temperature with rotating cup viscometer and capillary flow, and we got a relatively large set of data for two beryllium-bearing alloys. This is the well-known vitriloy 1 and the open symbols vitriloy 4. We were only in that region. That's about where we have a nose in the time-temperature transformation diagram for crystallization. We didn't get data, and so what was kind of surprising, if you do a VFT fit, we got some fragility that is intermediate between the most fragile, like O-terphenyl, and the most strongest glasses, like the silicates. A pure metal, by the way, would be very fragile. Melt viscosities at the melting point of for almost all pure metals are of the order of 5 × 10⁻³ Pascal seconds. So on the Angel plot, that would be very down in the fragile region. So it was kind of surprising at first that we had a relatively strong liquid, where you can also probe fragility by looking at the glass transition temperature. Here, for example, for the beryllium vitriloy 1, if you change the heating rate in a DSC, you get a shift of the glass transition temperature. Of course, you have to be careful. You have to first cool your sample with the same rate that you heat it again. Konrad Zamwa showed that almost 20 years ago already. And then those close signs, those are the viscosity data, and they are in good agreement here for that system with the shift of the TG. So what we plot here is inverse rate. If you multiply that with the width of the glass transition region, you get a relaxation time, and you can then make your fragility fits. And we see here several systems that are getting more complex here if you go up, and that is reflected here in the fact that they get stronger as you go to a more complex system. And here's the range is shown. We are really right in the middle of this Angel plot with our metallic systems. So the binaries, for example, zirconium nickel here being the most fragile, and the complex vitriloy 5 component being the strongest. So recently we published this. So again, you see here several metallic systems. Well, it has to be pointed out that we mostly used the data here in the glass transition region only for two systems. At higher temperatures, we will get back to that, because in the liquid, other things are happening. So you see again this tendency that if you get more complex, you have a higher viscosity and a stronger system. So pure metals, as I said, would be down here. For a good glass former, the liquidus is at around 0.6. So that tells you one reason why we have really good glass formers. So the viscosity of the good glass formers is several orders, up to 6 to 8 orders of magnitude larger than that of, for example, pure metals, and that slows down the kinetics tremendously. One can show that, in fact, the crystallization time is proportional to the viscosity if you, I will come to that back in a moment, if you just use classical nucleation theory. You can also analyze, just plot the fragility parameter as a function of the number of components, and you get this interesting behavior that it monotonously increases. Of course, that doesn't mean that every five-component system has a high fragility. High component system, you find alloys that have a large fragility parameter. It's also interesting if you extrapolate back to one component system, that would be the pure metal, you arrive at a fragility of the order of 2 to 3, which would be the most fragile system. So with increasing components, the fragility parameter that is attainable increases. Just a quick look at the crystallization. So those are experimental data on the TTT diagram of that alloy, the vitriol. If you have a pure, so you see the nose of the TTT diagram is at about a minute. That's a tremendously long time. If you compare a pure metal or an alloy, would be here down in the milli nanoseconds range. So that's why we have this nice large region to work with. And if you do just classical nucleation theory like Ullmann and Davies did in the 60s, and you work that out, you really see that the crystallization time here is proportional to the viscosity, and that means by just increasing the viscosity by 4, 5, 6 orders of magnitude, we push the nose of the TTT diagram by the same amount. And I would claim that this sluggish kinetics in those bulk metallic glasses really is by far the main reason why we have this bulk glass formation. Okay, so that was, yes?
So basically this comes from the fact that it's not the usual factor
you think about
in the exponential factor, it's a big factor.
Right, as it goes. And the fusion is
interesting.
Right. So it goes in, of course, to the nucleation rate, but also to the growth rate, of course, in both. And if you work that out, you see that if you assume this, you see that this is the case. Yeah. Okay, so well, that was just talking about kinetic fragility. People like Austin Angel have tried to connect the thermodynamics with the kinetics, so talk about a thermodynamic fragility. And he shows it already here in this plot that the CP for different systems is very different, like the CP at TG for those really strong systems, the step is really small, whereas for more fragile systems, it's large. And we tried to look if there's a connection between the kinetic fragility and the thermodynamics, and what we looked at, we used the old Adam Gibbs description. So we looked if, well, the configurational entropy goes into that, And we looked at systems where the viscosity has been measured and where there were CP data in the supercooled liquid in order to determine the change of the entropy and then compare the VFT and the Adam Gibbs description. So we reassessed here 9 different metallic glass forming systems. We did the kinetic fragility plot, so you see here the increasing fragility parameter from this palladium alloy to these zirconium-based alloys, so the D of course increases in this direction. And then we also looked at the Adam Gibbs description where you have different parameters. You have the C, which is kind of an activation energy for cooperative rearrangements, and you have the temperature-dependent configuration entropy, which we for which we get CP data, or in all these systems we have CP data where we have this change of that configurational entropy. So this is an example for probably one of the best data that we collected, the palladium nickel copper phosphorus system. So CP in the supercooled liquid, the glass and the crystalline phase. And if you assume that there are not big differences in the change of vibrational entropy for the liquid and the crystal, you can approximate the change of configurational entropy as a certain configurational entropy. We took it at some temperature where the viscosity is 1 Pascal second minus the integral, the well-known integral with temperature. So this is not necessarily the entropy of fusion of the system. So we use that as a fit parameter in the end. So we have this activation energy and the configuration and entropy at some reference temperature where the that is kind of arbitrary, like in a sense in the Angel plot, the 10 to the 12 Pascal second is kind of arbitrary. And so then we find the temperature where the configurational entropy would vanish. And we do the Adam Gibbs fits, and we do independently the VFT fits to the viscosity data. In the VFT fits, we only have the viscosity data. In the Adam Gibbs fits, we have the viscosity data plus the thermodynamics reflected in the change of CP. So then here's schematically how that looks like. So if you have a fragile, or that's the claim, if you have a fragile system, the CP goes increases more than in a strong liquid. The extreme case are like silicates where you have a very small step in CP. Well, if you integrate that, you see this the change in entropy. So of course in the fragile liquid, the entropy drops faster because the CP difference is higher, and in the stronger it changes less. And this is our result basically, and we really see that tendency that in a more fragile liquid the configurational entropy drops faster because the CP difference is different. So this fragility, the kinetic fragility, is expressed in the CP of those liquids. So we have the same tendency for the kinetic fragility and for this configurational entropy. So what is well that this one that's not really significant. No. That is experimental error. Well, we're extrapolating here to very low temperatures. So you can say, okay, the more fragile systems are on this side and the stronger systems are on this side. I wouldn't interpret this in any way. Okay. But what we find is that that the the temperature where the configurational entropy would vanish is in very good agreement with the T naught that we get with independently with our VFT fits. Yes.
Sorry, exactly what
What? We are just looking at the order of the curves. So this is a different approach than like Austin Angel did. We just take the VFT equation, take the Adam Gibbs equation, and that in the Adam Gibbs equation there must be this connection between the thermodynamics and the kinetics, because there you have the configuration entropy change, and that comes from the CP difference. It's approximately. It's just an experimental finding that from our Adam Gibbs fit, we get a temperature where the configurational entropy would vanish using the. And then we do a VFT fit, which in first approximation has nothing to do with the Adam Gibbs fit, and the temperatures that's a finding from the fits match. They are within like 20 degrees of each other. This is way below the glass transition temperature. The glass transition is typically 600 degrees for those systems, and those temperatures are 400 plus minus 10 degrees. So they are very close to each other. Well, that would be 10%. You can see that from that graph. You can see that from that graph. I had a table where I show you all the parameters. I cut it out because you do a VFT fit and get a T naught, and you get an Adam Gibbs fit using the thermodynamic data, and you get a temperature where the entropy, configurational entropy, would vanish. And if I compare those two independently determined temperatures, I get a relatively good match to within 20 degrees. Okay, now I switch gear. Now I go to higher temperatures. So we measure viscosity close to the liquidus temperature, so above the liquidus temperature, and also for some undercooling. What we use is a rotating cup viscometer. We have a cup or a shear cell, and we rotate a bob in here, a rod, and that's shown here. So this cup is here in this RF heating coil. Then you put your liquid in there and dip the rod in there, and so you only have a film of about a millimeter of liquid that gets sheared by rotating this rod, and then you get a torque in the shear cell, and from that you can determine the viscosity. And so you can vary the shear rate and get the viscosity. And we've at first thought this should be a Newtonian system, and metallic liquid should be Newtonian, but that was not the case, especially for a multi-component system. So here the range in which we sheared, so the liquidus temperature is here, and most of the experiments were done here, but we also did some undercooling experiments before the material crystallized. So what was surprising, as I said, is a non-Newtonian behavior, shear thinning. So there must be a lot of structure in that liquid. So here the viscosity as a function of shear rate. And for example, we started here at 1075 Kelvin, which is about 50 degrees above the liquidus temperature. And then we increased the shear rate and you get shear thinning, increase the temperature further, and we get those curves. You can describe that with this power law and get a shear thinning exponent. If that shear thinning exponent becomes 1, you have Newtonian behavior. If it's smaller than 1, it is non-Newtonian. But what we realize here is that if we go to high temperatures above about 1250, we get essentially Newtonian behavior. So this shear thinning effect disappears as we go to very high temperatures, or about 100 degrees above the liquidus temperature. Well, that's the same curve, same plot I just showed. If we now cool down to 1075 again and repeat that experiment, we get Newtonian behavior. So that effect that got destroyed doesn't come back again as we stay above the liquidus temperature. Of course, now you can do undercooling experiments. So you can shear at a constant rate and undercool your liquid and look what happens. And we did a lot of experiments on that. And what we find is, so we are above the liquidus temperature in this range. And this reflects the data I just showed. We have a high viscosity. If you shear this material faster, this line would come down. So all data at the same shear rate. So this is a liquid that shows pronounced shear thinning. If we increase the temperature, the viscosity drops and we become a liquid that virtually doesn't show shear thinning. That's virtually Newtonian. And if we now, those are the equilibrium data, if we now undercool, the viscosity increases again in the undercooled liquid and reaches that of the strong liquid. We excluded, those are large viscosity changes of about 2 orders of magnitude. We excluded that this is crystallization because you can track the temperature of the system as you undercool, and when it crystallizes you get recollescence, and the recollescence happens 60 degrees below the temperature where we stopped the measurement. We cannot go deeper here in the undercooled liquid because our torque center would get destroyed. So that's why we can. So we apparently we have 2 different states in that liquid. We have a strong state. We call it ordered state, which must have a lot of structure, and we have a disordered or more fragile state. The D star here is about 12, and of the ordered one, 27. Well, this is still much stronger than, for example, a pure metal. It's about as strong as typical good ternary bulk metallic glass forming system. So we have a transition from a strong to a more fragile state. So, and the question now, what is that? Is this maybe a first order phase transformation? So the hysteresis indicates that undercooling of the disordered state and superheating of the ordered state is possible or is involved. I mean, if you have a crystalline material, you cannot superheat it because you will always have heterogeneous nucleation at grain boundaries and the surface. However, if you have an ordered liquid, you can superheat that because you don't have these internal interfaces where you would get heterogeneous nucleation. We have very early on in the electrostatic levitator, we have seen a very small a recrudescence effect, which is about only 2 to 3% of the heat of fusion. So in that range we have observed that, and we are right now we are learning to do relatively accurate CP measurements in a DTA at high temperatures, and we in fact observe endothermic peak. It's just still in under investigation that we probably can associate with a CP increased CP in that temperature region. So what is the very So what is our picture of the whole thing? So we have a liquid that is at high temperature fragile, maybe only has short range order, and as a function of temperature there are compositions in that composition space where you can have a transition into a more ordered state, maybe a medium range order like Dan Miracle for example proposes it, or NMAR. And well, you can have this congruent point where you have a direct transformation from the fragile into a strong case, or you can, if you are off that, you might have a decomposition, which is sometimes observed in those systems where you would have a decomposition in a strong and a more fragile liquid. This would be analogous to ordering in a crystalline system where we forget about that. So we in copper gold, it's well known. For example, you have this FCC phase that of course it's crystalline, it has long range order, but it is a random solid solution. And if you hit certain compositions like 50-50, you have the disorder order transformation. So, well, we think, of course, the structure is always difficult to grasp, especially for us experimentalists. Just you heard of this model of Miracle, for example, or NMAR, where you have some sort of median range order. I'm not claiming that this is what exactly happens here, but just to have a picture. Structure can change just by mechanically shearing the system. So that would account, this would be a medium range ordered cluster, which you shear and you disturb the order. That would account for the structure viscosity or shear thinning. And of course, by temperature, you can completely destroy the medium range order and you only have short-range order present. We observe this transition indirectly also in other systems. So this is the data on this vitrola I just showed, and those are data on other zirconium-based alloys. They show also this fragile state at high temperatures, and if you however compare that with data around the glass transition, we get around the glass transition a much stronger liquid, so there must be some transition also in those systems. However, it must be at lower temperatures that unfortunately are maybe only accessible in an electrostatic levitation like Ken Kelton uses it. We have since then also seen it in other zirconium-based alloys, vitrola 105 and 101 if you are familiar with that. So this seems to be common at least in zirconium-based alloys, and let me summarize. So bulk metallic glass formers are rather strong liquids, which contributes to the slow crystallization kinetics. The strength increases with the number of components. The fragility is reflected in the change of configurational entropy. We observe a fragile to strong transition directly in vitrola 1, which we think must be due to an ordering process, probably from a short range order to a medium range order, and the comparison of high temperature and low temperature viscosity in zirconium-based alloys suggests that we have there similar transitions. And this work has been funded by National Science Foundation, DARPA, and recently by the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft in Germany. Thank you. So you mean at high temperatures?
Well, if you
measure viscosity of like 10 to the 13 Pascal seconds, you have to do an isothermal measurement, and then you.
What do you see as funny? What do you think of
your right. So you reach steady state immediately. Yes. I mean, we have done so many experiments. The kinetics, in principle, is very fast up there. So you reach steady state very fast. Well, if you look at the data, I mean, you those data are all collected in one experiment. You go from, if you change your shear rate, you immediately go to the next viscosity point, and if you go back to low shear rate, you immediately go back to a high viscosity.
I have two questions. One has a very quick answer. Have you tried to organize your data in terms of the J and T on the parameters?
No.
That are, you know. The other question is, have you explored in the shearing experiments the effects of reaching a steady state with different amplitudes and different frequencies? So when you're shearing, you can imagine going back and forth at a certain frequency and also a certain amplitude. And I was wondering if, you know, there's this work.
Well, we have looked for those effects, but it's like you
there are
put
these
in a certain shear rate, you reach this value immediately, and if you change your shear rate immediately, you get.
When you say shear rate, you mean frequency of going back and forth?
Oh, we didn't do oscillating.
Yeah, so, you know, there's these there's this work by David Pine and Paul Chaykin and things where they show that there's a dynamic phase transition in a, okay. in a GUI material where they at a certain frequencies and certain rates you actually arrest the system. We think that that's probably related also to the kind of thing that Sid Nagel used to see when he would do frequency dependent heat capacity.
Well, we are at very high temperatures. We are. For that system, we are at the very high temperature.
We're
far away from the glass transition.
I was saying near the glass transition. If you would do this, you might actually get a phase transition and lock the system up. You might look at these frequency dependent responses.
Well, I mean, if I would do, we just experimentally cannot change the shear rate by a great deal close to the glass transition time. But we should observe shear thinning, for example, at TG, because that's the same strong phase that prevails when you undercool it.
If you have small enough amplitude, it seems to me you shouldn't have trouble going back and forth, no? And reaching a steady state?
I don't know what you mean.
No, okay. Well, let's talk about it later.
Is there somebody? No, I think I'm asking, David and I think are asking similar questions.
Okay.
The point is that at a single temperature, you seem to find two different states of
right.
material.
Because you have to nucleate. You have to nucleate.
Okay, but now my question is, are you sure that you can't actually get from one to the other or perhaps find a different state if you just keep on shearing it? Because when you're shearing it, you're adding energy.
We have done that. Yeah. So you change your time temperature. I didn't show it here. By shearing, you basically promote this formation of that strong phase.
Well,
The thing is, you have very small driving forces. If you do nucleation theory, you have very small driving forces, and you also have very small interfacial energies, because the difference between those phases is just that there's an entropy difference, and that's directly proportional to the interfacial energy difference, and that's very small.
Okay.
So
the point is that if you want to define the actual viscosity, you have to be sure that you're in a steady state rather than a transient.
Well, it stays. I don't understand what you mean. It stays constant. I mean, it's just.
Okay. These are beautiful and very interesting experiments. There's just one aspect I'm trying to understand, and I'm not at all an expert here, so maybe I'm missing something obvious. The sheer thinning really surprises me. You said you're surprised too, because sheer thinning.
Huh?
To me, implies the existence of a long relaxation time. That you haven't gone, you're not disturbed, the system is being disturbed too rapidly in order to get the equilibrium behavior. On the other hand, the viscosities that you have,
they are so low.
Are so low that if you did any single component calculation, you'd come
in milliseconds,
maybe a nanosecond.
Nanosecond
relaxation time from the viscosity.
Exactly.
But maybe a second relaxation time from the shear thinning behavior. If you just had a single component model.
Well, I agree. So, but we are not able to resolve 1 second in our sheet.
No, I understand. I guess my offhand reaction was that the structural model that you put up.
Well, that's just a cartoon, right?
Yeah, I don't see how that has the right elements in it to sort of bridge, this something like a sixth order of magnitude difference in these two ways of looking at what the relaxation time is.
Right.
Two orders of magnitude in the viscosity, yes.
Right.
But maybe six orders of magnitude between calculating a relaxation time from the shear thinning behavior and from the viscosity, from those two ways of looking at it.
Okay.
So
that's a good point. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's have a coffee break now.